Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. About an hour ago, Idalia powered up to hurricane status as it bears down on the Gulf Coast of Florida. By the time it makes landfall tomorrow, it could pack life-threatening winds and storm surge. Correspondent Christian Benavides is in Tampa.
Mandatory evacuations have already been ordered for parts of at least 10 Florida counties, including here in Hillsborough County. Though the governor warns there is no reason for residents to leave the state.
It's not necessary to try to outrun the storm, just get to higher ground.
President Biden spoke with Governor DeSantis yesterday and has already approved a federal emergency disaster declaration for the state.
Classes are canceled at UNC Chapel Hill a day after a deadly shooting on campus. Correspondent Jeff Pegues reports.
Also active shoot on campus.
In a massive show of force, police at the University of North Carolina swarmed the campus. The alert went out, first of a person armed and dangerous, and then...
The gunshot victim is going to be in room 159.
I'm grieved to report that one of our faculty members was killed in this shooting.
Tense moments in a lockdown that lasted hours.
Local video appears to show a suspect being taken into custody. The person's identity has not been released. Neither has a motive. New surveillance video shows the whereabouts of the 21-year-old who killed three black people at a Dollar General store in Jacksonville, Florida over the weekend. Sheriff T.K. Waters.
Not only did the shooter park at the Family Dollar, he also went inside his store and bought some items. Coupled with this new information is surveillance footage showing the shooter's movements, both at the Family Dollar and at Edward Waters University.
Students at the mostly black college reported seeing a young white man pulling into a campus parking lot and putting on tactical gear. The FBI is investigating the shooting as a racist attack. President Biden is expected to talk about the administration's efforts to lower the cost of health care today. CBS's Linda Kenyon from Washington.
The president says his Inflation Reduction Act has helped lower costs, and Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says he's not done yet.
His administration has continuously put out ways to do that. Inflation Reduction Act, how it's going to be able to help Americans lower costs, the health care costs, how it's going to be able to make sure seniors are
And a rap star stopped the music for a Republican presidential candidate. The Daily Mail says M&M's issued a cease and desist order weeks after Vivek Ramaswamy broke into an impromptu version of Lose Yourself at the Iowa State Fair. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
The kids are heading back to class. But when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Sharp Cheddar Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joe Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, the Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. You can enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Tuesday, August 29th, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. Or you might be joining us on the Civic Media app or by podcast or Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. So many ways to join us here in the state of Wisconsin Sense. As we unpack the news for you this morning, here's what's on tap. We'll start with imaginary appointments and real meltdowns. Legislative Republicans in Madison are going to take action this morning on a job appointment that doesn't exist, but it's not going to stop them from continuing to try to interfere with the Wisconsin Elections Commission. In their quest to fire the head of the state elections commission, they're going to pretend she's up for renomination when she's not. Also, the right-wing Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court continues her very public meltdown about losing control to a new liberal majority. We'll also talk to Christina Lurie with the Uplift about some of the positive stories in our newsletter this week. In our second hour, we'll talk to veteran and former legislative candidate Ben Murray about veterans care, things that the Biden administration has been doing lately to help veterans, and get his take on what else needs to be done at both the state and federal levels. Then we'll talk to Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio in Wausau about what's coming up on his show this morning. Plus the weatherology forecast from Jennifer Vucicki, and another great night for the Milwaukee Brewers, extending their lead in the National League Central Division and extending their win streak as well. Along the way, if you've got questions or comments, our phone number is 844-967-2789, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com or comment on one of the live video feeds that we have on Facebook for the pages of Up North News and Civic Media and Bull Falls Radio and the Tap FM here in Chippewa Falls. More about what Up North News is working on later, including a special edition newsletter that came out yesterday for back to school purposes. But right now, for the purposes of having somebody to say good morning to, I turn to the guy that helps get us on the radio every day. And that would be Aaron Sommers down in Madison. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning.
What do we got down there up here? What did I say? I didn't say it. I said I should say for the first time now. It's 61 degrees up here. And it was really another really pleasant night overnight.
Yeah, definitely here as well.
And that's because we've got Labor Day weekend coming up. We've got a warm-up coming, and that is fine by me. There are folks who are ready for pumpkin spice latte and things like that, but I don't mind that Labor Day weekend is looking like it's going to be a warm one. It's the last, you know, true summer weekend, and I'm willing to take that. I'm willing to go along with, you know, having a hot Labor Day weekend.
You know, I respect that because, once again, I much prefer cooler temperatures, but I can understand wanting to bask in the sunlight.
Well, because we're, you know, fall lasts long enough as it is. It's already darker here. You know, remember how bright it was, you know, just a month ago. And so instead, you know, speaking of of moving into the season with pumpkin spice latte. I'm already noticing the news stories coming out to remind people it's not pumpkin that you're tasting in your pumpkin spice latte, because if you ever had to eat real pumpkin, that stringy stuff that comes out of the gourd, that would not sell very well.
No, it's definitely the spice that you're mm-hmm. tasting.
Yes, I think the pumpkin is like the visual part of it, but it's, you know, cinnamon and syrup and what else is it? It's allspice and nutmeg. And that's, yeah, nutmeg, cloves, ginger, all are kind of blended together. And it's all very nice. Don't get me wrong. It's very autumnal, shall we say. It's just the pumpkin part always kind of throws me off.
Basically, it just means it's orange.
Yeah. There are things you can do with a real pumpkin. You can make pumpkin butter. You can make pumpkin fries. You can have roasted pumpkin. I myself am a big fan of pumpkin seeds, you know, that are roasted and salted. But, you know, not the, by and large, it's not something that you find regularly in people's kitchens for cooking.
I feel like you could probably make your own pumpkin pie filling too. It just might be more effort than you are willing to put in.
Oh my goodness, yeah, a lot more effort to get that all mixed up and you know, into the right consistency, because let's admit it, pumpkin pie filling is, it's basically pudding.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I love it. I love it. I cannot get enough of that. So I will be ready for all the fall stuff when the time is right, when it comes, that's all right. But for this weekend, if it's going to be back in the 90s apparently, and we've got no plans, we're just going to kind of do a staycation up here on the lake, and that'll be just fine. I'll live with that. Hey, we've got some merchandise to tell you about from Up North News. There are some new t-shirts out that advertise Up North News, that have some fun with whether we're up north. Now, what is up north for you in Wisconsin? There's a t-shirt that gives a definition of bubbler for all of your non-Wisconsin friends who might see you wearing it, and much more. So go to upnorthnewswi.com and click store in the top banner and do yourself a little shopping for yourself or for a friend. All right, as I mentioned, we have a daily newsletter that you can get, again, at the website upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the top banner. But we also have a special edition that just came out yesterday, put together by Selena Heller and myself, with a slightly more political slash newsy bent on back to school, looking at things like the teacher shortage and, you know, why there are still budget troubles beside, you know, despite a record surplus. So we'll get you instructions on how to get that link. If you're not already signed up for the newsletter, then you can just click on it and see it on the website. And hopefully that'll get you into becoming one of our regular subscribers as well. All right, let's take a break here. We're going to unpack the news next. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Tuesday, you're up north. We'll be right back.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, big Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
We've got today's history lesson and music break coming up later this hour, but I'll go ahead and tease you by telling you it was on this day in 2004 that the MTV Video Music Awards took place, and the Best Rock Video VMA went to Jet for Are You Gonna Be My Girl? 6 a.m. temps across Wisconsin look like this. Up here in Lake Wasota, it is 63 degrees. La Crosse, 65. Up in Hayward, 53. Over in Oshkosh, 65. Madison coming in at 67, and Waukesha coming in at 63 degrees. Hey, break up the Brewers. Look at this win streak. 9 games now as Christian Yelich and Mark Canha each homered during a 4-run first inning at Wrigley Field. And the Brewers beat the Cubs 6-2 Monday night in the opener of a 3-game series. Wade Miley pitched 6 very effective innings, only 1 strikeout, but no walks. And get this, he pitched 6 innings, so that would be 18 outs. 12 of his 18 outs were ground balls. And so as much as you'd like the strikeout, if you can keep that ball on the ground and the fielders do their thing, unlike the Cubs that had a few errors, if you can get 12 ground ball outs, you're doing something right here. And that put Milwaukee now 5 games ahead of the Cubs in the National League Central Division. The 9-game streak is the longest winning streak for the Brewers since an 11-game run in 2021. They will play again tonight and then tomorrow afternoon. If you're a Civic Media listener in the Fox Valley, then you know you're catching the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM. And if you are in the Richland Center area, you know to catch those Brewer games on WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. All right, time to unpack the news here. And again, our studio line is 844-967-2789. Or if you're watching on one of our Facebook live feeds, you can put a comment there. We may see it and put that up on screen for you. Now, I'm going to give more than proper credit here that two of the main stories in Wisconsin this morning, you can get a great summary of both of them from two of the best in the business, and that would be Molly Beck and Jesse O'Poin. Jesse's at the Journal Sentinel now after many years at the Cap Times. Molly Beck is at the Journal Sentinel as well, so you should be a subscriber there. But I will at least give you a feel for what they are talking about in this morning's edition on two significant stories. The first one deals with the effort by Republicans to move forward with an imaginary appointment for the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And we've already heard from Attorney General Josh Call saying that what Republicans are trying to do in their effort to fire Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, is not rooted in anything in the law. Well, now the legislature's own attorneys are also telling the legislators' Republican leadership that what they're doing is not rooted in state law. By background, if you're not familiar with this, again, the Wisconsin Elections Commission has done outstanding work keeping Wisconsin elections safe and secure and accurate. Megan Wolf has been a top-notch professional at the head of it. Nothing partisan about what she and the staff there have been doing at all. The same can be said for the 1,800 local clerks around Wisconsin, who, whatever their political leanings, if they have any, do not come through in the job. Wisconsin's elections are among the safest and most secure and accurate out there. But simply because Donald Trump had a whiny little meltdown, suddenly the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which, by the way, was created by Republicans a few years ago when they got rid of a different body that was starting to sniff around Scott Walker,
Now they want to dismantle the Wisconsin Elections Commission, or at least replace the administrator, Megan Wolf, even though, again, she's done a quality job. But somebody has to be the scapegoat. Well, Megan Wolf's term expired recently, and under the old way of doing things, that would have meant that the Wisconsin Elections Commission, made up of three Democrats and three Republicans, would decide either to renominate her and send that on to the state Senate for confirmation, or nominate somebody else, essentially, you know, not firing Megan Wolf, but saying, you know, your term has expired and we're not going to renew you. Well, neither one of those things has happened because, and again, forgive me if I'm boring some of you with the details, but I don't think it can be stressed enough how Republicans rigged the game so that somebody on the Natural Resources Board by the name of Fred Prehn could stay on the board, even though Governor Evers had appointed somebody else. Prehn's term had expired. But because the state Senate, run by Republicans, never took up Governor Evers' nomination of a replacement, Fred Prehn said, well, I can just stay here till the Senate confirms somebody, right? And the state Supreme Court, after it was challenged, run by conservatives, the conservative justices said, yep, you're a squatter. You can stay there. That's just fine. So that's the rule right now. And so Megan Wolf, her term's expired, but she doesn't have to do anything. She gets to keep doing her job until the Senate appoints somebody new. So the Senate has a committee today that's going to act as if she has been renominated for a new term by the members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, except the Wisconsin Elections Commission hasn't done that yet. They haven't renominated her. They need four votes to do that. Well, the three conservatives voted yes on renominating her so that they could send it to the Senate and they could reject it and fire her. The three Democratic members on the commission said, nope, we're abstaining from the vote. And so you don't have the four votes that you need. The state Senate Republicans are acting as if the 3-0 vote with three abstentions is a majority vote, and they're going to pretend that she's been renominated. But both Attorney General Josh Call and now the state legislators' own attorneys have said, no, state law is really clear. You need to have a majority of the full commission. 4 of the 6 members, not 3. You need 4. You don't have 4. So there's no nomination, no renomination for Megan Wolf. But again, that's not going to stop Republicans from holding a hearing today, pretending as if Megan Wolf's been renominated. Megan Wolf has already said she's not going to testify today, that she's been put in a very untenable, bad position through no fault of her own. So what's going to be happening today in the Capitol is another charade to try to interfere with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and by extension, Republicans are again trying to interfere in Wisconsin elections. Well, while that's happening over in the west wing of the state capitol, over in the east wing of the state capitol is where you find the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which recently switched control from far-right conservative justices to progressive liberal justices, and that is not going over well with 2 of the right-wing justices on the court, including the Chief Justice, Annette Ziegler. And again, just for brief background, people saying, well, wait, if the 4 liberals now have control over the 3 conservatives, why is one of those conservatives, Annette Ziegler, why is she still Chief Justice? Because again, conservatives changed the rules of the game a few years back. And in this case, instead of it being like the most senior member or, you know, which it had been or anything else, they changed the rules so that it was a majority vote of the Supreme Court, which back then was conservatives, for a 2-year term. And so Annette Ziegler is currently serving a 2-year term. But when that's up, if liberals still hold a majority, then they can elevate one of their own to Chief Justice. But for now, because of rules that conservatives put in play, conservative Annette Ziegler is still the Chief Justice. But what the majority did when they took control a couple of weeks back was they removed some of her responsibilities and powers, the same that she and conservatives did to Tony Evers and Josh Call before they took office. And they replaced the director of state courts, a gentleman who was a conservative candidate for state Supreme Court some years back. And this, of course, was a matter of trust. The majority wanted a director of state courts that they could trust, and so they replaced him with somebody else. And at the time, both Annette Ziegler and right-wing Justice Rebecca Bradley were rather loud and vocal about their unhappiness with it. And then we thought it would all die down. It has not died down. Chief Justice Annette Ziegler penned an angry email, and it looks like leaked it to the media, because how else would the media get an email that came out coincidentally the same day, saying that she's going to go ahead with plans to post a job listing for the director of state courts, even though that position has already been filled. And that's the one business-like thing that was in the email. The rest of it was filled with vitriol, calling what the liberal justices did nothing short of an unprecedented coup. She later criticized one of the liberal justices, Rebecca Dallet, for what she called a deeply inappropriate and at times partisan tone and tenor in an email. So that led to Rebecca Dallet having to respond to the Chief Justice. And Dallet responded last evening in this article written by Jesse O'Point. And she goes on to say how disappointed she was in the Chief Justice, that she felt this need to respond in the media for this. And so Rebecca Dallet had some very strong words for her, saying that it was, again, inappropriate to make this a public thing. "I am incredibly disappointed," Dallet writes, "that you have chosen to play games in the media rather than communicate with members of the court privately through our procedures." And in emails that were obtained by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, it became clear that Ziegler, the Chief Justice, has had opportunities to take part in meetings or discussions about this matter, but that she has refused. And so Dallet wrote that she would reluctantly release this email to Ziegler to the public because, quote, "the people of Wisconsin deserve to hear more than Ziegler's inaccurate view of the situation leaked to the media from an email." And so the new director of state courts, the one who's been ignored by Chief Justice Annette Ziegler, turned out that she also has sent a note back to Chief Justice Ziegler saying, "It was good to finally receive an email from you regarding my work as the interim director as we enter my fourth week on the job. As you know, I have tried to communicate with you several times." So this is not looking good for Annette Ziegler. It's not looking good for Rebecca Bradley, the other right-wing justice who have been, speaking out in tweets and talk radio and in angry emails that have been, sent out and about, rather than simply abiding by a standard that they set, which was that elections have consequences. And that sometimes that means that positions change and responsibilities change. And sometimes when you change the rules for your own benefit, it means that there may come a time when those same rules that you've changed do not work to your own benefit. These are things that we learn in elementary school. But if you continue to be like a petulant child about these things, then don't be surprised that you lose credibility. It would serve the Chief Justice and Justice Rebecca Bradley very well to back away from the keyboard and go back to doing their job, which this time around is going to involve writing a lot of dissents rather than majority opinions. Back with Christina Lorre and The Uplift. After this, you're up north.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Idalia's a hurricane now barreling toward Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis.
There's a hurricane warning in place for the entire Gulf Coast of Florida from Sarasota County all the way up through Franklin County in northwest Florida. So the impacts potentially can be very, very far and very, very wide.
It's expected to make landfall tomorrow morning. A suspect's in custody in a deadly shooting at UNC Chapel Hill yesterday. Campus Police Chief Brian James.
Police discovered one individual, a faculty member, had been shot. Unfortunately, as we have reported, this person is deceased.
Neither the suspect's name nor a motive has been released. Video shows the 21-year-old gunman making purchases at a dollar store in Jacksonville, Florida, before he killed three black people. President Biden.
We can't let hate prevail, and it's on the rise. It's not diminishing. And so we have to act against this hate-fueled violence.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
A new head coach.
We got one objective, one goal, is to play for a championship.
A talented backfield.
Braylon Allen does it again.
And a defense that just...
Down he goes.
Won't...
Intercepted. He's gone.
Stop.
Another turnover forced.
Join us Saturday, September 2nd. It's the Badgers and Buffalo Bulls in Madison. Our coverage begins at 12:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
WRJN, 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, Racine, and 98.1 FM.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats. And there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Welcome back and welcome to The Uplift. Christina Laurie is here, as always, where we go over some of the stories she's working on for the newsletter that we put out every morning. Go to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the top banner. Christina, how's it going?
I'm great. How are you, Pat?
Well, it's great because I've got your list of what we're going to talk about today, stories that you're working on. And when I think of, you know, supper club day, I think of Saturdays. We go to supper clubs on, you know, Saturday evenings often, but there is a National Supper Club Day and it's coming up.
Yes. August 31st every year in Wisconsin is National Supper Club Day. We started the holiday, of course, because supper clubs are really, I didn't realize how uniquely Wisconsin they were until we were in a pitch meeting earlier this week. And someone from our Pennsylvania team asked, this might be a dumb question, but what is a supper club? And I felt like the ambassador to Wisconsin with my answer.
Look at you.
But they are so defining here that Ed Lump, he's the CEO of the Wisconsin Restaurant Association. He said the two things on the to-do list for most Wisconsin travelers are to see Lambeau Field and to dine in a supper club. So
nice.
Thursday is the day that both travelers and locals can do that here. And I thought I'd test your knowledge, Pat, since you grew up here with a little Wisconsin supper club trivia.
Sure.
So I guess the kind of defining thing of supper clubs is that routine that borders on ritual of the order of everything that comes out. I guess I there are different ways to do it. So I'm going to ask for your preferences, actually. Do you start, what type of old-fashioned is on your list?
Of course, a brandy old-fashioned sweet is how you get things going, for starters, yes.
Okay, it's sweet. You're not sour.
Nope, other people do. Some get it with bourbon, and some get it with Southern Comfort. Some get it with olives instead of cherries, but I'm in for the classics.
Okay, then when it comes to appetizer, what is your go-to? Are you a breadbasket guy? Are you in it for the relish tray? Are you in it for the odd accoutrements? I found there's a supper club in Madison that does cinnamon rolls instead of breadbaskets.
I saw that. I really want to try that out. But that, in my mind, that gets a little bit beyond your coloring outside the lines at that point. Again, these things come in an order. Either the relish tray comes to you, or that's the one thing that's there when you sit down. And then there's the bread basket. And then there might be appetizers like cheese curds or something. But quite often, you know that the dinner is going to be so big that you don't get an appetizer per se. You just work on either the bread or the breadsticks or the carrot sticks or any of the other things that are there just to set the scene for that beautiful steak or broasted chicken or fish yet to come.
Okay, that begs the question, what kind of guy are you? Are you checking the poultry or the meat box?
Really depends on the day, the reputation of the restaurant. Steak more often than not, but a lot of places have, the prime rib special on Saturdays. They may have a fish fry on Fridays. And again, if it's got a good reputation, you're crazy not to try it. But as I told folks here a week ago, when I was at the at Lamas Supper Club in Rice Lake, they have roasted chicken on Sunday afternoons. And we went there after church, and it was some of the best roasted chicken I've had in Western Wisconsin. I have to say, Eastern Wisconsin, you'll find more roasted chicken, and it's completely unbeatable. But for my side of the state, the roasted chicken at Layman's, they bring you out, of course, family style, a platter with about 8 pieces on there. And I feel like I could have eaten 8 more if they'd have brought it. So I'm glad they didn't.
Okay, 3 more. We'll do this rapid fire. Potatoes, baked, au gratin, or mashed?
Again, depends on the dish. I don't really get into au gratin potatoes, so I'm very happy with a baked potato. But if, the mashed potatoes, again, family style, they can be mighty good.
I'm sweet. I like to throw a real curveball in there and go for sweet potatoes. Then after dinner drink, what is your go-to?
For me, it's not what a supper club is, which is usually the grasshopper or the brandy Alexander. It might be something like a little Di Serrano on the rocks.
Okay, so you steer clear of the ice cream?
I do, but only because I know what about 8 out of 10 bartenders think when you're told to make an ice cream drink. It's traditional, but it's also very time consuming, and I like my bartenders not to be angry at me, so I let them make them for other people.
Okay, so you're a people pleaser. Last question for you. Do you have a ballpark estimate of how many supper clubs are in Wisconsin in total?
Ooh, no, and I should know that. But like I said before, it's been a while since we've talked to Ron Fayola, who authored 3 books on it. So no, I don't. Tell me.
Well, first, for a plug for Ron, he has a new book, 4th edition, coming out this November. Mm-hmm. So you can learn about all of the state's 250 plus. There's a plus because I think it teeters between 250 and 260 here was new ones open and close. Right. That's all a lot of supper clubs.
It really is. And so now you can see why it has its own National Supper Club Day on the 31st.
If you went out to one every weekend, it would take you 5 years.
Mm-hmm. There's days I feel like that's my quest. So I'm just going to continue on along that way. All right. So that gets us to a little later this week. But now by the end of the week, we're talking Labor Day weekend and fall festivals getting underway.
Yes. Are you hungry? One of the biggest food festivals in Wisconsin returns this weekend to Madison. That's the Taste of Madison, of course, and that takes over the whole Capitol Square. If there are any farmers market fans or regulars listening to this, know that the farmers market will still continue as usual on the Capitol. One weekend a summer where it does displace during art fair on the square, but this does not happen this weekend, that you can be sure that you'll still be able to get your farmer's market favorites.
Okay.
But if you're not in the Madison area, there are also a large number of food festivals. It's kind of the start of food festival season here. So just a few others is Bacon Bash in River Falls coming up. That's delicious.
Yeah.
Then in Sheboygan, always host Johnsonville Brat Days. This one already passed, but Rhubarb Fest in Osceola, that's always a great one. And then also coming up in September is the big Warren's Cranberry Festival.
Yes.
I have never been. Have you been?
I have once. It's very crowded. It's very popular. And so it's totally fine that people go there. I'm not knocking it at all when I say, you know, there's a big crowd. I mean, honestly, on the interstate, on I-94, you'll see a backup in the shoulder for traffic to get in there, but clearly it's worth the wait, given how popular it remains.
Well, it's just, the numbers are staggering. I mean, the town of Warren's there, guess how many people live there? Let me throw it out to you.
What is that? 500 people maybe? I don't know.
Yes. 543.
Hey, all right.
That weekend, it draws crowds of more than 150,000 people. I mean, that's insane that their infrastructure can even withstand that.
It really is. And by the way, as we're talking about cranberry festivals, I know I'll hear otherwise, but you also have to mention the Stone Lake Cranberry Festival if you're heading up into the Northwoods there. Stone Lake also, I mean, there might be 50 people that live there, but the town just fills up. And, you know, you got Bayfield Apple Fest. And so you really kind of set the scene last week with the Corn Fest, the sweet corn.
Yeah.
And now everything else is starting to come in, and there's going to be all kinds of tasty reasons to get out of the house.
And one, just the final silver lining of these festivals, just as the price of everything seems to keep going up and up, it really is a great way to not only support our local farmers, but get a great deal on the freshest food too. Because I know at the Taste of Madison, all of the dishes are still between $1 and $6. So, I mean, that's very affordable, and it's a great way to support a whole variety of local restaurants and farmers without having to mortgage your house.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, one more thing on the calendar, and it comes up this coming Saturday. Again, you can't have fall without the festivals, and you can't have fall without some Badger football.
Yes, and it is the dawn of a new era. It's really the talk of the entire state with a new head coach, Luke Fickell, taking over. And there are about a million different preseason polls that try to predict, you know, and rank the teams. The Badgers are consistently in the top 25, but the one ranking that really stood out to me was done by College Football News. They listed the 20 best programs that haven't made the college football playoff yet. And the interesting number here is that the college football playoff, it only has been around since 2014. Mm-hmm. But in that time, only 3 Big Ten schools and 14 teams overall have made it. So Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State are the only Big Ten reps. But they ranked Wisconsin as the number one best program that has never made the college football playoffs. And they acknowledge that this could be the year. So that's very exciting. I hope they are living up to the hype, because it seems like there's only one way to go. I almost hate when I keep reading all these articles saying, you know, Badgers are going to win this, Badgers are going to win this, because it's the same situation that a lot of like gold medal Olympians run into. When the hype is so high, you can really only fail, right?
I guess, but you know, I'm going to go with the sense that, again, the Badgers have this new era. The Packers as well have it. And instead of it being sky high expectations, I get a feeling a lot of people are saying, okay, let's enjoy this. Let's see how the new coach does. Let's see how the new quarterback does. And I don't feel like there's a sense of pressure on either one of the teams. Now, of course, if they, you know, if either one of those teams begins to go, you know, 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, yeah, then we're definitely going to talk about pressure. But I think people are just excited to have football back and see what these programs can do.
And if there are any holdovers that are kind of still disappointed that Jim Leonard missed out on the head coaching job, you can feel free to root for my Illini, because he was hired by former Badgers coach Brad Villamina. So, I mean, we'll take you. We're always recruiting new Illini fans, and they are on the CBS list of the most underrated teams in the Big Ten. So if you want to root for a dark horse. I'm trying to recruit people.
I was going to say, and that ends today's Illini football talk, which I'm sure we'll do again sometime, because you can't resist talking about your alma mater.
There are so many Badger connections, though. We basically take all of the leftovers.
Basically our farm club. Yeah, that seems the way that it works here. All right, Christina, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Did you happen to notice, Mr. Zommers, as we were having this lovely discussion about supper clubs, that our comment section was being vandalized?
Oh, yes, I absolutely did. And I was going to bring it up if you didn't.
Because we've got an extra minute here. And we usually visit with Luke Mathers on Thursdays. But apparently, you never know what topic is going to resonate with people. But Mr. Mathers is on Facebook asking, you know, what about a nice roasted duck? I guess I've never really thought to get that at a supper club. I don't know. Aaron, is that something that happens normally down there? He's in Sun Prairie. Maybe the supper clubs of Sun Prairie like to do roasted duck.
Maybe they do. I've never had roasted duck at a supper club, but he's probably been to more than I have, and I know you have.
But then we go to his next comment. Bread doesn't count as an appetizer. Hello, if you like roasted duck, the bread is the appetizer, because how else are you fattening up the duck in order to have, you know, Sunday dinner? So I don't know. Mr. Mathers takes it finally further off the rails when he notes that the final old-fashioned definitely counts as a nightcap, which is going to be weird if you go there for Sunday dinner. But hey, if that's your idea of a nightcap. By the way, Mr. Mathers, old-fashioned, capital O, capital F on the old-fashioned, proper name of a drink. So I hope that we've set straight the right way and the wrong way to make comments about supper clubs here.
I think he will learn from this experience.
He just wanted to see if we were watching the comment section. And yes, we most decidedly are, Mr. Mathers. And I always like when Christina brings up supper clubs, because they are, while they're still prevalent around Wisconsin, you know, we have lost a lot of them. There's the one just down the street from the old University Avenue studio. What was it called? Smokies or Smoky Joe's?
I don't know.
Anyways, right. And it just went out of business and has been torn down for something else to be built there. But, you know, there are other ones that are getting started. There's Wasota Lodge up here on Little Lake Wasota, the old Writer's Steakhouse. It sat vacant for many years, but now that's opened up as a supper club with one of the, you know, Neil is just a classic supper club bartender, formerly from Connell's Steakhouse. So, you know, there are all these places you should try. And while it's not Christina's cup of tea because she wants like Mexican or whatever, this is still the quintessential place to get your dinner in Wisconsin, whether it's steak or, I guess, a nice roasted duck. We'll be back with today's music break and history lesson. You're up north.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up.
Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. That cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy skies today with a slight chance for isolated storms. Highs level off around 78. Winds out of the northwest, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows level off around 50 tonight, mainly clear. Daytime highs approaching 70. Tomorrow, bright sunshine. Clear skies Thursday with daytime highs approaching 75. 82 Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 63 degrees.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Pretty woman, walking down the street, pretty woman.
This, of course, is the Roy Orbison classic, Pretty Woman, released this day in 1964. So that song is 59 years old now. Before we get the rest of the history, I just wanted to say thanks to Linda Atkins for her online comment about loving the show. Thanks for the Supper Club talk. Roxbury has one, and the Maple Tree is a good one. And we also heard from Luke Mathers again. Apparently, the place where he likes to get roasted duck is Ishnala, the supper club in Wisconsin Dells, where you might have to wait a while to get to your table, so you're going to be hungry when you get to it, but there's where you get your duck.
That way you can make sure you're hungry enough to eat the whole thing.
There you go. Let's see, a couple of automobile-related anniversaries today. On this day in 1898, the Goodyear Tire Company was founded in Akron, Ohio. And on this day in 1885, Gottlieb Daimler from, you know, Daimler Chrysler, Gottlieb Daimler patented the world's first internal combustion motorcycle, the Wright Wagon, on this day in 1885. And happy birthday to the United States Air Force Academy. It opened this day in 1958 in Colorado Springs, so it is 65 years old today. The number one song this day in 1970 was by Edwin Starr. On this day in 1966, the Beatles performed their last concert before paying fans at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. And between some audio difficulties and the crowd, and you couldn't really hear anything over the screaming, the Beatles basically said, we're done. We're done playing live concerts. We're going to become a studio band and experiment with new types of sound. The rest being history. Another happy birthday, this one to Netflix, which launched in 1997 on this day as an internet DVD rental service. Aaron, did you ever use Netflix as a DVD rental service, or has it always been just an online streaming service for you?
A couple of my friends had it, and I tried to talk my parents into getting it. I was like, that's so cool. You could just order the DVDs online. But we never got it until it became a streaming service. And even then, my parents were like, we just like cable. And you know what? Fair enough.
Fair enough. And now you can stream everything, you know, through your cable anyway. We did use Netflix DVDs. I actually lost one. I had to pay the fine because I could not find the DVD anyplace. And now I have a 2004 copy of the Yankees versus Red Sox 2004 American League Championship Series, which was an amazing series, and I wanted to see it again because Boston was down 3-0 and then won the next 4 games to go on to the World Series and win that. But I didn't actually want to own the DVD, but now I do. Happy 59th birthday to Perry Reed. You know her better as the singer Pebbles. I would not have guessed Pebbles being 59 years old, same age as me. Happy birthday to her. Born this day in 1915 was the Swedish actress Ingrid Bergman. You hear a lot of Casablanca references on this program, and so, of course, we're going to note Ingrid Bergman's birthday. She died in 1982. The singer and jazz pianist Dinah Washington was born this day in 1924, passed away in 1963. John McCain, the former Arizona senator and presidential candidate and American hero, was born on this day in 1936. He passed away in 2018. And let the record continue to show John McCain as an American hero, far more so after being tarnished by draft dodger Donald Trump. Elliot Gould has a birthday today. The actor is 85 years old today. Elliot Gould is 85. And here's another instance of somebody who turns 65 or would be turning 65, and you just don't think of that person as a senior citizen. Well, Michael Jackson, of course, passed away in 2009, but on this day in 1958, he was born in Gary, Indiana, and today would have been Michael Jackson's 65th birthday. We referenced the 2004 MTV Video Music Awards earlier. Here was the winner for Video of the Year by OutKast.
1, 2, 3, My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure.
So as we were all stuck with Hey Ya in our heads as an endless earworm, we were also talking about Beyonce and Jay-Z, because the VMAs that year marked the first red carpet appearance for the two as a couple. It was on this day in 2005 that Hurricane Katrina devastated much of the Gulf Coast from Louisiana to the Florida Panhandle, killing more than 1,800 people. One of the victims from the music world was Barry Cowsill of the Cowsills, who drowned there at the age of 50. Fats Domino was one of the survivors. He was 77 at the time and was rescued from his home in the Ninth Ward of New Orleans. And as somebody who toured the Ninth Ward several years later, and you can still see the door steps, you know, the steps leading up to a front door, but that's it. There is no house on a lot of these lots. It was just such a tragedy on many different levels, not just the response, but the evacuation and everything about Katrina that continues to haunt that area. Even as we now talk about another tropical storm getting set to hit parts of the Florida Panhandle and the Gulf Coast. All right, that takes care of our music break and history lesson for today, except that I also want to wish a happy birthday to Supreme Court Associate Justice Neil Gorsuch. I hope that you get to spend your 56th birthday contemplating the ways in which you continue to fail your country by accepting a stolen Supreme Court seat, something a more honorable judge would have refused. And that takes us to another milestone that we'll mark, and that is the passing of Joe the Plumber. Samuel Wurzelbacher has passed away at the age of 49, complications of pancreatic cancer. Now, Joe the Plumber, that's not what he started out to be. He was Samuel Wurzelbacher, who happened to have a chance meeting with then-presidential candidate Barack Obama as he was campaigning for the presidency in 2008. And he was lifted, shall we say, by the McCain campaign and by others as kind of this everyman, middle-class American, got the nickname of Joe the Plumber. And it helped illustrate the ongoing tension between making sure that our taxes are affordable, but also pointing out that to be against taxes is to be against the very services that enable you to make a living as a plumber or something else. Later on, Wurzelbacher's mouth, shall we say, got him into trouble with some of the things that he said or wrote. Like at one point after a mass shooting in 2014, He wrote to the parents of the victims of a mass shooting and said, "As harsh as this sounds, your dead kids don't trump my constitutional rights." So, if nothing else, he helped crystallize some of the differences in American politics. And by differences, I do not mean that both sides are equal. Much more in our next hour, including how we care for our veterans with Ben Murray. Up next, you're up north.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.